Let's bring a little sunshine into our day, ladies and gentlemen. It's time for Appraise This with Tim Luke and Greg Schramm, the appraisal guys. The frickin' frack of Nick and Knack. You'll find them at Treasure Quest Appraisal Group, TQAG.com on the web. And you'll also find them right here, right now, via Skype. Good morning.
Good morning.
Oh, in unison. All right.
We're here to spread a little sunshine.
We need some.
I enjoyed that. I enjoyed, you know, in case anyone's wondering, Marshall calls us first and then puts us on hold during Bird Note. And I always enjoy finding or listening to the Bird Note to find out what the bird is. And this was actually a fun one today. I love the scientific name of the olive-sided flycatcher. I love the scientific name. It's Contopus cooperi, which has nothing. And so I always look them up when we're getting ready to go on air, and it's a cute little bird, and I always keep wondering. The guy that does the bird note, I always think it's you. It sounds just like you.
Well, the strange thing about bird note is that for a long time I thought they were funded by the Bobblehead Doll Foundation. But it's not. It's the Bobblehead Foundation.
That's a very different foundation than the Bobbleheads.
I couldn't quite come to grasp why would the Bobblehead Foundation.
Right.
Is there a bobble? So one day I went looking for the Bobblehead Foundation, and there is, of course, there is no Bobblehead.
There is. No, there's not, but there's a lot of bobblehead collectors, yes, I will tell you that.
Well, anyway, so it's the bobble link, and so I learned that about 2 months ago. Isn't it nice?
I just have to say I really enjoy being waiting in line to go on the air listening to your that program. It's really a fun little
the bobbleheads.
Well, I haven't heard you guys start snoring yet, so I know it's a good sign.
Okay. Oh no, absolutely.
All right. Well, Jill's not here yet, so I guess what do we talk about here?
So, what we're going to talk about is I wanted to start with something that happened to me this last week. Is that somebody wanted this appraisal on this little collection, and of course, I went to the marketplace, took a look at everything, and went back with my findings. And they're absolutely not. They were so upset. And one of the things, and this happens to us all the time, is then they go online and they find one sale that happened to sell this painting sold for $20,000 in Slovakia in 2014. But they're trying to find the value today. Well, I said, one item does not a market make. But also, secondly, is that could have been a fluke. That person bought it, no one else. And I looked into the auction from that particular auction company, and they also had four or five other ones in that sale that did not sell. So it's not like it is a huge indicator of this is the value and this is what things would sell, especially 4 years later or 3 years later in today's marketplace. And when you find all of the other sales, and then I did a research on all the sales that have sold, and a good majority, like over 40 paintings, sold under $1,000. So where do you think my value came in?
Yeah.
I mean, and people wonder, how do we arrive at value? And value, yeah, there are spikes because there were some things that sold for $75 and there were some things that sell for $20,000. So our job as appraisers in putting value on certain items is that we have to come in and say, here's the most common. This is what happens the most in a market. And, and I had graphs and I had all of the information, all the sales to support it. And sometimes what our job is, we get pressured because for whatever reason they need this appraisal and they're getting a loan or they're doing equitable distribution. They don't want to, one side feels that it's worth so much more. And it's like, well, yeah, but no, unfortunately. And that happens to us a lot. Right, Greg?
Well, did you let them know that the reason for the appraisal was that they were trying to, trying to get
right, well,
a loan?
Right. But regardless, whatever it is that they're doing, this, I'm applying this to just about everything that we do, is that the bigger picture is that this is a lot of times when we're dealing with what something is worth, people always want to know, well, wait a minute, how do you arrive at that particular value? And the amount of research that we do, we also have the wherewithal that we can look behind and take a look at some of those auctions and take a look at, oh, well, five were offered, only one sold. Well, what does that tell you? Is it they all are worth this? Is it that this was just a special one? Was it one person was interested in that one item and nobody else? I mean, there are a lot of factors. So we have to interpret the data that's out there and not just look at one particular sale, but look at the whole universe of sales, the whole group of sales.
You can turn that around when somebody goes looking for a used car. They go out there and they look for the lowest price, and when they find other prices, they don't understand that that one really low price that's out of the range, there's many reasons why it's out of the range of the other
prices. Right.
No, I had that, I swear, on a totally higher end thing also last week. Fortunately, in this instance, I was dealing with someone who understood that there could be a range between literally $500 and $22,000.
Right.
There really was. And I, you know, but if you aren't, if that person was rare, that person's totally rare. There's, mm-hmm. you know, it's like, how can something range from that to that?
Right.
Because if you go to the grocery store, you know, or just regular things, you're talking about a dollar. In general, right. You know, okay, I can get this ink cartridge for X, or I can get this apple juice for X or Y. You know, it's just not, it's not a regular thing. But one of the aspects that I'm always fascinated in, just in the appraisal / auction / marketing business, is how it looks so different than as seen on TV, and most people get their information from, you know, from what they're seeing on TV. Also, you could extrapolate. You watch, if, for example, American Idol, and you think, okay, you know, you don't see all of the auditions and the...
Or the work and the practice work and what they're going through and the rehearsals and the screw-ups and, oh my goodness, and the coaching that goes in. And that's what we do, is that research. Go ahead, Greg.
Well, the interesting thing about this appraisal that Tim is doing, and the very first thing I said to Tim when he said, oh, well, they're trying to get a loan on this, I said, well, at least this time, they're actually doing some research into the market to find out how much they can get on this piece or how much they can loan against
it. Well, to limit their liability.
Right, yeah. Because we had an occasion in the... probably about 2005, no, actually it was 2002, I think it was, where we had a bank who thought, oh, this is a fabulous, this of course we'll be able to give, I forget, it was like $250,000 or something, a loan on this poster.
What was it? Collectible.
A collectible poster. Advertising. And it turns out that they didn't do their due diligence. And fast forward, we ended up having to sell the piece, and it ended up selling for $1,200.
Yeah. And
so the bank was on the, you know, they were on the hook for this. So they ended up just taking the money and licking their wounds. And I think it's probably the last time they ever lent money on a piece of art, at least without doing some sort of research.
Yeah.
And then you also have to say, and this is a totally airplane, all right, like over the heads of, there's a difference between that kind of appraisal, a bank appraisal, and an insurance appraisal. So, you know, no disrespect, but who can, if you are only trying to get your piece appraised so that you can get a loan, you don't care. You just want the number.
Well, and almost the same thing for insurance. And this is where it becomes very vital to find out what is the purpose. What is the purpose of the appraisal? Because the appraiser has to be able to find those different value parameters that we have to do. Because for insurance purposes, it's really, you know, especially if you have a framed piece, it is also taking into consideration the frame and bringing that person, if that whole piece was damaged, bringing that person back to whole. How and what do you need to look at, and what markets do you need to go to? How are you going to do that? And what is it going to cost? And so there's more that is added in, as opposed to when it's just the piece that's being sold, it's usually sold with the frame and they take that into consideration. We don't take the frame into consideration at all in just, well, maybe it's a little more decorative. That'll add a little bit of maybe aesthetic value, but might not translate into the monetary. So we're just looking at what's inside the frame. And so these are the different things that appraisers need to be able to be aware of, and then also be able to articulate that to the client, to be able to help them understand whether they get it or not. That's a whole different thing, but at least it is put out there to help them understand, here is how we arrived at this particular value, and this is what this is. And of course, if there are things that we didn't consider, you know, I'm always about, look, if I didn't consider something, or I didn't find a correct sale, like I didn't see this sale from Slovakia. So when we were communicating with the client, they sent this information. Well, what about the international market? What about this? And I said, yeah. And then I explained, well, yeah, that was one. And there were three others that went unsold. So maybe you should go to a bank in Slovakia and see if they'll lend against this, because it's just not something I would feel comfortable putting any higher values on, because the rest of the market does not support that. And if that's where the market is, well, then that may be. But, you know, I think there were two items that sold in Slovakia in the whole 10 years. So of all the different items that have been up, I don't think so. So our job is really taking a look at all of the entire, again, the universe of sales and everything, and coming up and weighing that against, well, if this were, because this all becomes hypothetical, if this were to be sold, what would they expect? And it's managing expectations, which is not always easy.
Well, I know we're just running, we're very close to the end here. And before we go, I just want to, there is a sad note this month. I was doing a little research on an article that Tim emailed me this morning about this new currency that's coming up that people are using to bid online for things, called cryptocurrency. And anyway, one of the pieces that was sold at an auction on Live Auctioneers was a piece by Robert Indiana. So of course, as I am wont to do, I did a little bit more research. And it turns out that in May this year, Robert Indiana, who is the artist who did the very famous pop art, The Love, sculpture and the love print, he passed away at the age of 90. And he has sort of been under the radar all these years, but his things, his contribution to pop culture and to pop art was quite amazing. And
we had our photo taken in front of that Greg, in San Francisco, which was great.
People will remember him mostly probably for the Love stamp, which was created by the U.S. Post Office in 1973. Right. So a sad note about that, but a major impact on the art world. And so the next time you look at your Love stamp, just
Robert Indiana.
Or go take a field trip. Look at one of the actual sculptures.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. How about that? Absolutely. Spectacular. The Art Institute of Chicago has one of the, I think there was a total of, I'm trying to think how many there were. I want to say five or six. There weren't very many. And they have one of them in their sculpture courtyard. And it's quite spectacular to see. Very understated. It's not over the top, but it's just a wonderful piece of American art history. Yeah. So I recommend it highly.
And speaking of history, in the final notes, especially with things that merit appraisal. History, which is also known as provenance, is, you know, helpful. It really helps you understand what you have. And people should just take a minute to figure out where this fits in the continuum, because things aren't quite as disposable as one might, as certain people have been led to believe.
I like the word provenance.
You do.
Provenance.
You've taken up provenance. You've also finally, it's taken years, started calling art openings. Openings, vernissage.
I have?
Yeah. you haven't used vernissage yet, but opening. Finally, I've been waiting for an opening. I've got an opening. We've got an opening. Yeah.
What's that word? The other word?
Vernissage.
I never even heard of that word.
Work on it.
Well, I'll have to work it into next week's program somehow.
You certainly can. I'll tell you the best way to learn it is to just go to a Paris gallery, because that's what an opening is.
A little expensive.
But that's because it's in French.
Yeah, that's all. A vernissage.
So in American, in English, we just say opening.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Et voilà.
Sacré bleu.
Boulet.
All right, enough of this foolishness. We'll speak to you guys next week.
Hey, have a great week.
Take care, guys. Bye. That is Tim and Luke and Greg Schramm, the appraisal guys, a frickin' frack of Nick and Knack. Treasure Quest Appraisal Group at TQAG.com on the web.